Brody v. Congress Development. Mr. Goro.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm David Goroff on behalf of the appellant, Sam Rohde. Your Honors, there's no question that there was a catastrophic leak of landfill gas in Hillside, Illinois that began in October 2005. There's also no question that the Chapter 7 trustee for Resource Technology Corporation operated at the landfill and its gas collection and control system, which I'll occasionally call the GCCS, at the time this gas leak occurred. Finally, there's no question that this not only devastated the village of Hillside as a community, but also destroyed the business value of the hotel that was the landfill's next-door neighbor, which was owned by Mr. Rohde. Despite the obvious injury, the courts below determined that Mr. Rohde has no claim against the Chapter 7 estate, and this was error on several grounds. First, Your Honors, it misapplied the decision of Redding v. Brown, which holds that a party injured by a tort of a bankruptcy estate has an administrative claim with priority. Here, there is no question that RTC's bankruptcy estate injured the hotel. First, RTC was in Chapter 11 bankruptcy.
Is that a question of misinterpreting Redding, or is that just a question of a factual finding about causation?
Well, I think it both misinterprets Redding and includes within it a misapplication of causation, because one of the estates had control of this landfill from 1999 forward. And there's no question that it was in that six-year period that the landfill deteriorated. The operative question, though, is when did injury occur? When did the tort take place? And that's where the courts below misapplied the doctrine of causation. Because no tort occurs, as this court noted in Fogle versus Zell, and the lower court noted in Ray Canseco, until you have harm, until you have injury. And the courts below ignored the fact that the injury took place only at October 2005. That's when the gas first leaked onto the hotel property.
What should the trustee have done?
Well, one of the things the trustee should have done is done whatever he could to stop the gas leak, but I'm not sure.
Be concrete. What could he do to stop the gas leak?
He could have helped the—he lacked the resources to do anything, so as a practical matter—
So what should he have done? He had no resources.
But that's not a question as whether he's liable for a tort, Your Honor.
Well, I don't know. I'm interested. If there's nothing he could do, I don't understand sticking him with a liability.
Well, but Your Honor, if a pauper comes and knocks you on the head, he would still be liable whether or not he could have done something to pay for your medical treatment. The fact is, he would be the cause of your injury, and therefore he would be legally responsible.
That's not an example. The pauper did something, hit you on the head. What did the trustee do? The trustee finds himself with these assets.
Well,
and
he does
he
more
just
than
has them just for a few months, and he doesn't have any resources to deal with any catastrophic consequences of his control. So where's his culpability?
Well, his culpability is as a matter of law, but you...
Culpability is a matter of law. Be practical.
If you'll allow me...
If there's nothing he can do... In what sense is he responsible for the injury?
First of all, he's responsible as a question of permit. He's responsible
as a trustee, right? So,
Your Honor, in when he first took over as Chapter 7 trustee in September of 2005, he specifically sought and received bankruptcy court permission to operate this landfill, and he did
so. Well, he had to. What could he do?
He could have turned it over to Congress. Congress was the owner. He could have abandoned it at that time.
Trustee
he didn't seek to abandon it.
What, the trustee abandons the assets of the bankrupt?
Your Honor, if he believes the assets are toxic, so to speak, of course he could have done that, as he ultimately did in January of 2006. But he didn't do that. And the reason he didn't do that is he saw a profit opportunity in continuing to operate the GCCS, which was supposed to produce energy that RTC would then sell. So he had a profit motive. At the same time, he's under complete knowledge that there are environmental problems with the landfill and the GCCS. That is noted even in his motion.
If he wanted to produce energy, then he's trying to manage these assets for the benefit of the creditors. And isn't that the Redding case?
And Redding says that when you are doing that, if you thrust insolvency upon an unwilling tort victim, you as an estate are liable. And Your Honor, as your own...
That's in favor of your argument, right?
And not only is Redding, but Fogle versus Zell. In this case, Mr. Rohde had no knowledge of any problem in the landfill. There had been no public awareness. On the other hand, the trustee did know, and what did he do? He diminished maintenance expenditures because he was running out of money. He didn't abandon it. He declines maintenance expenditures, and he keeps operating the landfill. And so, just like the pipe burst in Madison Management in Fogle versus Zell, so here the landfill GCCS failed in October 2005, causing injury only at that time.
Mr. Koroff, let me ask you, let me tell you my concerns about your case and see if you can address them.
Sure.
In your discussion of nuisance and trespass under Illinois law, I understand that you would have a terrific claim against Congress, which, in fact, Mr. Rohde pursued.
Correct.
Because the landowner, the landfill owner, operator, has this non-delegable duty to the neighbors. My question, in essence, is why does somebody who's a contractor for that entity, an employee or an independent contractor whose duties seem to flow only from that contract, have a further duty in tort to the neighbors for, in essence, failing to do its job for the landfill operator? You follow me?
I do, Judge Hamilton. Mm-hmm. And I think the difference is the duties are not limited to contractual duties.
Okay, where do they come from?
They come from the Illinois Clean Air Act and the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency regulations, which impose on those who operate gas collections and control systems to do so in a way that keeps any landfill gas within the landfill or destroys it so that it doesn't cause a nuisance. It comes from the specific permit that the trustee obtained, and here the Chapter 7 trustee had the permits changed to his name. Your honors will recall that
now you're making a different argument. I thought your argument was that the trustee saw a profit opportunity by obtaining energy from the landfill, and in pursuit of that he caused a nuisance, and then that becomes the Redding case. Now you're suggesting he has a statutory duty that unrelated to any effort by him to obtain profits from this landfill, right?
I don't think the two are exclusive, Your Honor. I do think that...
You want to choose between them, or are you going to rely on both of them?
Well, I think... my choice would be what's in our briefs, which is a nuisance and tort theory. I was answering Judge Hamilton's question as to why there is not merely a contractual relationship between Congress and RTC or its estate that precludes Mr. Rohde from recovering because he's not in privity. And the question is, under Illinois law, under the order of the bankruptcy court, the Chapter 7 estate was responsible for the GCCS. It's the GCCS's failure that causes the liability. And therefore, he's answerable. If we go back to Fogle versus Zell, the defective pipe wasn't laid by the trustee. It was laid by Madison Management Company long before it went bankrupt. It exploded while there was a Chapter 7 estate.
Because I think this is rather vague. Suppose that the trustee wasn't out for getting energy from the landfill and just had a statutory duty as the owner of the assets to comply with clean air regulations. Wouldn't that be a very good case for the trustee to obtain indemnity against Congress? Because Congress would be the evildoer and the trustee just subject to this statute. I mean, that's the typical case where you have indemnity. You have a statutory duty so that the that falls on a completely innocent party, and they have a guilty party, so the innocent party can shift his costs to the guilty. Why wouldn't that be appropriate in this case?
Actually, Your Honor, I use that analogy. I talk of the landowner. If you buy a house and your tree falls on your neighbor, you are liable as the homeowner to your neighbor, even though you may not have known you had a defective tree. And one of the reasons we do that is because you as homeowner can then seek recourse against the prior homeowner for fraud or negligent misrepresentation by omission or contract, whereas your neighbor could not because the damage had not occurred.
Right, but why shouldn't Congress end up as the liable party?
Congress should. We have a joint tortfeasor theory.
Sue Congress.
You can sue Congress as we did.
Why do we need the trustee in this? Why isn't Congress responsible for all the harms?
Because under the joint tortfeasor theory, Congress is fully responsible, but so is the Chapter 7 estate. They're independently, jointly, and severally liable until Mr. Rohde is made whole.
But the injurer, the defendant whose only liability is based on a statutory duty, he ought to be able to obtain indemnity from the active tortfeasor.
That's right.
And then the whole cost would fall on Congress.
Right. Again, Your Honor, we're presupposing a hypothetical, a trustee whose only liability is by virtue of statute, which is not the case here. But I agree that the trustee would have that opportunity to seek indemnity. I don't see why that would free the trustee from responsibility to the victim. Your Honors, I see I'm eating into my rebuttal time, if I may preserve that. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Gore. Mr. Camilla?
May it please the Court, my name is Philip Camilla. I represent the appellee, Congress Development. Your Honor, I believe that the fact of the matter here is that Rohde simply did not prove their case, even if reading applies. That the facts or the evidence they put on at this hearing, they simply put on Mr. Rohde, the owner, who testified about how bad the smell was, and they put on a hotel valuation expert. Then they repackaged their case, deposition transcripts from Congress, from the Congress case, and planted it into their case against the trustee. Not one piece of evidence indicated, showed, even suggested that the trustee did anything or could have done anything to prevent or cause this gas leak, assuming there was one. It's important to...
What do you mean, assuming there was one? Is that a question?
The fact of the matter is that the landfill owned by Congress Development is the source of the gas. The gas, where the gas came from, whether it came through the surface as a fugitive emission, whether it tunneled underground, or whether there was a flaw in the design of the gas collection system, are all disputed facts, are all unknown. He suggests that the trustee had a profit motive. Well, the only way these companies make money, like RTC, is by selling gas for energy. The trustee, in December 2005, filed a motion to sell the engines. He was liquidating the assets of RTC and Congress Development. He sold the engines, I believe, in February 2006. It was approved. He abandoned the permits. And then he rejected the contract in 2007. He did everything he could at that point to end his relationship.
Suppose that you bought a factory intending to liquidate it, and while you're, you know, arranging the liquidation, you're in control of the factory. You're not doing anything. And while that's going on, through no fault of yours at all, it blows up, and it causes damage to neighbors. Wouldn't you be liable as the owner of this? You were the owner. You caused the accident, and wouldn't you be liable?
I think it comes down to the elements of tort. You still have under Redding is not a free pass to a tort action. You still have to prove under negligence, duty, breach, causation, damages, nuisance, and trespass the same issue. If you inherit a problem that somebody else caused, like the Chapter 11 trustee or the debtor in possession, assuming the gas collection system did fail here, which is also unclear. If you inherited that problem, then I don't think that you would be liable under tort law. Unless there's some theory of strict liability or absolute liability that would apply where the sheer ownership subjects you to responsibility. Even if that applied, you still have to show causation. Was the failure of the gas system the problem, assuming it did fail? And I should add, there was no evidence that the gas system did fail. It was an assumption that there's odors, something bad is going on out there. It's easy to sue the landfill since they own the land, they own the gas, and it's a simple nuisance, as Judge Hamilton said, it's a simple nuisance trespass action. You don't have any defense to it because you own the property. When it's the gas system, air pollution control system, there are all sorts of uncertainties. Was it underdesigned? Was the landfill cover tight enough so there weren't fugitive emissions? Was there a chemical reaction in the landfill which was suspected?
What were the assets under his control?
The gas collections at the Congress landfill, there was the gas collection system, which is the series of pipes in the landfill. There was an engine that would convert the gas to electricity.
That was all RTC stuff?
Right, yes. All right. And I believe there was a backup flare.
But it seems to me if the trustee was the temporary owner of all RTC's equipment, and that equipment fails and causes the harm to the hotel and so on, wouldn't that be a nuisance for which the owner of the defective machinery would be liable?
Like Judge Hamilton, I have a problem in how you get to nuisance when you're a contractor on site. To me, it sounds like a negligence theory. If your negligence in operating the system caused harm, I could see there being an outline of possibility to prove negligence. But nuisance to me implies a possession over the instrumentality that is creating the nuisance. The odor, the owner of the fish plant or the water or the wastewater treatment plant. Here, there's uncertainty whether the odor is being generated from the landfill or from the failure.
Uncertainty, but it is possible that perhaps the combination of the landfill and defects in RTC's gasification system jointly caused the odor and the damage to the hotel. And in a situation like that, wouldn't the owner of the defective machinery be, if you're a manufacturer and you sell a defective product, the fact that you don't know it's defective, maybe because you just bought it the day before, that doesn't excuse you. You are the seller of a defective product. And I would think if you emit a nuisance, the fact that you didn't know what you were doing because you just bought this equipment, I don't see that would excuse you.
Under Illinois law, a nuisance and trespass, it's an intentional act or an act that has a substantial chance of causing harm or negligence. Illinois law, nuisance and trespass are not strict liability. And so to use those two theories against the trustee, we have to see, they have to show that there was an intent or a reckless.
The intentional act is the operation of the system that creates these dangers.
I don't think it's the operation. I'm sorry.
What could you address Mr. Rohde's point about a duty that's non-delegable arising from the permits and Illinois statutes?
Well, that's the first time they've made that point.
Well, they made it in their briefs.
I do not think. I think under the Clean Air Act. I believe there is a citizen suit provision. I don't think I think that they might have a it might set a standard of care for a negligence case, but they didn't make any of those arguments here, and you still have to show a breach of that duty. So you know we're several steps before that point where they're proving the tort claim that they had to prove to recover under the Redding case.
What if the what if the odor had started before the trustee took over and that it was due to RTC's negligence? Then the trustee takes over, and suppose there's nothing he can do to prevent the odor. It just continues. Wouldn't he still be liable? I mean, he's bought something that's causing tortious damage, and it seems to me he continues operating the tort. Maybe there's nothing he can do about it, but I would think he would be the person causing these injuries, or a liable defendant.
I think under a tort scheme where you need to find fault with the tortfeasor, you have a hard time ascribing fault to a trustee that inherits someone else's problem. In a tort context.
Let me just make, if I could vary that just a little. Suppose Congress is the bankrupt party and has the trustee. It has a responsibility for controlling the gases from this operation. The trustee steps in, takes over, and the next day, before the trustee's even found the keys to the office, gas leaks. Surely the trustee would be liable under those circumstances.
I think under the nuisance and trespass theories, the distinction between the landowner and the contractor who's operating, that does present a different set of facts.
That's what you have to hang your hat on, right? I mean, your defense depends upon that difference.
Yes, yes. And what it comes down to in our case is that Rohde presented no evidence that the trustee did anything wrong or could have or should have done something to something else to stop the odors. What the trustee did here was to act reasonably. He basically got out of Dodge. He saw that this was a money-losing venture, filed a motion to sell the engines, terminate the permits, reject the contract, handed it back to the landfill owner. He did that within 4 months, which is pretty fast in the bankruptcy context.
But a lot of harm can get done in those 4 months. So.
If you've got
a trustee operating a business, it's not as though the business gets a total free pass from tort law during that.
I think you still have to show tort liability on the trustee, something they did not do here.
Can I ask you, Mr. Comello, what money are we talking about here?
Pardon?
What money are we talking about in this bankruptcy at this point?
Mm-hmm. Well, that leads to the Redding, the whole issue about Redding applies, but there is not a lot of money left in the estate, the bottom line. And we're really fighting over pennies in the big picture. And as a matter of fairness, there's creditors with claim, with proven administrative claims, accepted administrative claims, who actually benefited the estate. And now we have a tort claimant who comes in with a $20 million claim who doesn't prove his claim but wants essentially 80% of what's left in the estate or 90% of what's left in the estate.
Can I ask you about you represent Congress, which has, what, about $1.5 million in
Correct.
Approved administrative claims, and that was for work that you all did to repair the gas control system? Is that
Correct.
Right? How did that work benefit the RTC estate as opposed to benefit Congress, since I assume none of this equipment, you all had the duty to operate the equipment to control the gas, and I assume nobody pulled the pipes out, right?
The thought at that time was that the gas system may have been under-designed, not enough pipes in the ground. Mm-hmm. Therefore, when Congress got it, the trustee did not have the funds to repair it or to even investigate what the cause was if there was a problem with the gas system. Congress spent the money as fast as possible. There was an appeal of the rejection of the trustee's contract, and there was a stay of that rejection, and it wasn't until April, I believe, that the district court dissolved the stay. And so the Chapter 7 trustee in some ways could have still been responsible all the way until April of 06 for the non-compliance events for the exceedances of the air pollution control standard.
Yeah, we usually call those violations.
Violations. Yeah, that's a simpler way to put it. Any other questions? Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Kamala. Mr. Goroff, how much? A few minutes.
Your Honors, as he began his presentation, Mr. Kamala answered, I believe, your question, Judge Posner, about what could the trustee have done. And that's what he did in February 2006. He abandoned the permits, and he sought sale of the property. He took a gamble in September of 2005, and that was to try to keep operating a system he knew was defective so that he could earn a few dollars more for RTC in the process. And it was during that time that the gas leak began. Mr. Kamala says that there's nothing in the record that shows RTC as an estate was responsible. But in addition to Mr. Rohde's testimony, in addition to the expert testimony, and in addition to more than 100 exhibits, you have substantial admissions from Congress itself. There was a motion to lift stay, which Congress filed before Judge Weedoff in November of 2005, after the gas leak began. And it's in the appendix at page 328. And it goes into great detail as to the allegations by Congress against the trustee, because at that time Congress was choosing to distance itself from liability and point fingers at the Chapter 7 trustee. And Congress noted there that RTC had admitted the current and grave breach of its fundamental obligations under the agreement, that he admitted that the gas collection facility is substantially incomplete and in a dismal state of disrepair. He admitted that the estate lacks the capital to address the matters in the NOVs, notices of violations. And Congress scoffed that in his request to the IEPA, the trustee puts forward no plan to remedy the violations cited by the IEPA other than to ask Congress to make the upgrades required to return the GCCS to a state of compliance. And this is at page 12 and 13 of our opening brief. We address it again at page 3 of our reply, and we cite the appendix references. At the time, Congress's president told Mr. Rohde and others in Hillside that there was nothing they could do and that they didn't have the problems of a gas leak on their radar screen until it occurred in October 2005.
The trustee didn't actually do anything that helped the other creditors.
Well,
you say he was trying to earn pennies or something for gas, but that didn't work, right?
Well, it didn't work, Your Honor. But I think that he has a fiduciary obligation to act in what he perceived to be the best interest of the creditors. I believe that's why he chose to operate the GCCS.
Yeah, he didn't do anything for the benefit of the creditors. So it's not really like Reading, right?
No, I think it's very much like Reading.
If you have a trustee or a debtor in possession or something who's operating a company and, you know, keeping it alive and doing good things for the creditors, but then commits a tort, well, then the victim of the tort should get this priority. That makes perfectly good sense. But this trustee, he was just a caretaker. He wasn't doing anything to make this a going concern.
It may not have been a going concern.
So your claim, I can't see any reason why your claim is superior to that of the other creditors. What's special about your claim?
Well, Reading says because we're a tort victim, we have administrative priority.
Reading is a very different case.
Your Honor, it's not. It's a
rely
fire.
On Reading.
Your Honor, in Reading, a
Reading
fire.
Reading is a case where, you know, you're trying to operate, you're trying to save a business, and you do certain things to help the creditors, well, you can't get out of the expenses that you've caused. But this is, say, this is just a caretaker. He's liquidating this thing. He's not trying to run it.
Your Honor, he
can comply with all these environmental rules. I don't see why. I don't see what's special about your claim relative to that of the other creditors.
Your Honor, in the York case of this court, which involved a Chapter 11 liquidation, in the Lavelle versus Currens case.
This is not Chapter 11.
I understand that we cite Chapter 7, Your Honor, if I may.
Talk about Chapter 11. Tell me why you think, not citing cases, but being practical, why is your claim superior to that of the other creditors?
Because someone who is injured by an estate, and that happened here through trespass and nuisance, takes priority because they have had insolvency thrust upon them, whether it's a liquidating insolvency or a reorganization.
Well, so did the creditors.
No, the creditors are generally in a better position to know they are dealing.
All tort creditors take priority over all contract creditors?
I'm not sure, Honor, but I'm working on
the law.
I'm working on the
slate. That's not the law.
Nor is it my position. I'm working on this.
This is your position. You say because you're a tort creditor, you're a pathetic victim, so on, you should take priority over the contract creditors. That's not how bankruptcy works.
No, we are a post-petition tort creditor. And post-petition tort creditors under Redding and...
I don't get it.
And progeny.
Mr. Goroff, if we shrink whatever the relevant period is for the trustee's action to, let's say, 10 days after assumption of his responsibility, would the tort have occurred within those 10 days?
Yes. The tort, if
so
it was a nanosecond.
It's the tort occurs as soon as the trustee...
The tort occurs when the harm occurs under Fogel versus Zelen.
So I say it's just a...
And it's fairer to put the burden on the trustee who has the assets and who operates the property than it is on the innocent victim, which is the alternative.
You're so impractical. There's nothing he can do. It's what Judge Flom says. It's just
who would assume,
an accident.
Who would assume, Mr. Goroff, a trusteeship in that setting, knowing, taking the facts of our case on September 2005,
Well, Your Honor, he's not...
You become a tortfeasor the moment you...
He's not personally liable. The estate is liable.
I appreciate, and
I think a lot of people would, because they still tend to earn whatever they can earn out of the trusteeship once you back out all the claims, including claims for torts or injuries. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you to both counsel. Next case for argument...